Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Lamed Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 9 lines from the top of Daf Lamed Ches. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a no say, a topic heading, which reads, Loi nitna Torah elo lemoshe ulezaro. Very, very surprising statement that the Gemara will have to explain. And that is that the Torah was given only to Moshe Rabbeinu and his descendants. Can that truly be? Now the Gemara. Om Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. Lo nitna Torah elo lemoshe ulezaro. The Torah was given exclusively to Moshe Rabbeinu and his descendants. Shenemar, Ksov Lecha, Psol Lecha, write for yourself, or etch out the tablets for yourself. Ma Psolton Shelcha, as we saw in our previous shiur, at the end of our previous shiur, where we discovered that just like the etchings, the chipping, the chips from the carving of the Ten Commandments tablets was to be Moshe's possession, Moshe owned, af ksavon shelcha, so too the writing of the Torah, the content of the Torah is yours, is Moshe Rabbeinu's. U'moshe noag bo toiv asayin v'nosno liYisrael. Moshe, out of the goodness of his heart, toiv asayin, literally the good eye, magnanimity of Moshe Rabbeinu, and he gave it to the rest of Israel. The Olavakos of Oimer, regarding Moshe Rabbeinu, the Pasuk in Mishle says, toiv ayin hu yivorach, kinosan milachmo nadal. The one of a good, kind eye is to be blessed, for he has given of his bread to the poor. At this point, you notice a series marking, one of our geometric forms, in this case a volcano shape. On the side under the Mivneh heading, we have written Sidra Shel Kushos, a series of questions, all from Psukim, Al Hodinemar, regarding that which was said, Lo Nitna Torah Elo LeMoshe Lazaro, that the Torah was given only to Moshe and his descendants. Now the Gemara. Mosiv Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda raises an objection from the Pasuk, V'oisi Tzivo Hashem Oisahi L'Lameid Eschem. Translated would be, and Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking, it says, and the Almighty commanded me at that time to teach you. So that the teaching of the Torah to the rest of the Jewish people isn't a function of the goodwill of Moshe Rabbeinu. That was God's command. The Gemara answers how that Pasuk should be read is as follows. The Oisi Tziva, I was commanded by Hashem. In other words, the Torah was given to me. Va'ani lochem, and it was me, Moshe Rabbeinu, I decided to pass it on to the rest of the Jewish people. Question. Re'ei, limadati eschem chukim u'mishpatim, kasher tzivani Hashem Elokai. Behold, I taught you the laws of the Torah as the Almighty commanded. So, again, the dissemination of Torah unto the Jewish people wasn't a function of the toiv ayin of Moshe Rabbeinu, but rather that was a direct heavenly command. The Gemara says no. The reading of this pasuk is as follows. O-si-tzi-va. In other words, I was commanded the Torah, v'ani lochem, and I gave it on my own volition to the rest of you. Question. The pasuk says, V'ato kisfu lochem es hashira hazois. And now, you shall write for yourselves this song, And in raising this question, we're assuming that the song is a reference to the Torah, so that the Torah was to be given over to the Jewish people by divine command. The Gemara answers, Hashira Lechuda. The Shira, the song, which is a reference to the to Parshas Hazinu, toward the end of Sefer Devarim, the Parsha, the second to last Parsha of the Torah, Parsha Hazinu, is in effect a Shira. Shira, roughly translated, I hesitate using the word song, but we'll leave it at that for right now, because the term Shira also conveys a special way in which those particular psukim are written in the Torah, beyond their, we'll say, their poetic, the poetic license that you find in those psukim. Nevertheless, the Gemara's response at this point is, when the there was a command to write for the Jewish people to write the Shira, it's only the Shira, only that part of the Torah. Question: Leman tie li Hashira hazois li aid bivnei Yisrael. This the Shira represents a witness to the, we'll say, the divine connection between the Almighty and the Jewish people. Now, the Meforshim, and we'll look at the Meforshim together, on the second wide line of the Rosh, L'man tia li hashira zos li'ed, v'im lo nitan lehem ha-toyra elo zu hashira, alma he'id. If all that was given to the Jewish people was that particular section, that song, so what does it bear witness to? Also, we look in the Rashi, Leman tia li hashira zos leid, v'i shira levado komar. If all that was referred to is the Shira, that portion of the Torah, not the rest of the Torah, my sahadusoika, what witnessing does it bear in creating this, we'll say, testimony to the connection of the Almighty with the Jewish people? How is it a testimony? There is also a I mistakenly said that we were reading from the Rashi. We just read from the Ran commentary. The Rashi commentary is on the first narrow line above, Leman tieli le'ed shiyilmedu kol ha'tirah v'yalamdu oisa al-mul Yisrael nami nitna. This is a witness that the entire Jewish people shall learn the Torah. So we see that the entire Torah was given to the entire Jewish people, not just the Shira. So what was the reference made at the beginning by Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina that the Torah was given only to Moshe Rabbeinu? We see that the Torah, the entire corpus of the Torah, was given to the entire Jewish people. The Gemara answers, Elo pilpula bi'alma. Again, we look at the Meforshim. We look at Rashi on the third narrow line, pilpul bi'alma, lahavin davar mitoch davar. Hu denitan lemoshe. The ability to derive information from other information, to derive something from something, that ability or that wisdom was given to Moshe. In other words, you have your, we'll call it the basic explicit aspect of the Torah that was given to all of the Jewish people. The tools, wisdom to derive subsequent information from the pre-existing information, that's called pilpul bi'alma, that was given exclusively to Moshe Rabbeinu, but he passed that on through his magnanimity, through his good eye, to the rest of the Jewish people. We look at the Rosh commentary, the third wide line, pilpul bi'alma, havona v'charifus, understanding and sharpness, v'hainu, k'savon shelcha. We said ksav lecha before ksavan shelcha. What is the connection between depth of understanding and the writing? Ki kol a chochma v'asechem remuzim b'ksav hater b'tzuras ha'osios. This is fascinating. And the shapes of the letters contain within them hints to deeper understanding of the Torah. So that wisdom, the chokhmah and the seichel that are hinted to in the words, in the letters, in the writing of the Torah, this is something that was given exclusively to Moshe Rabbeinu. We'll call it the secret behind the letters, and Moshe Rabbeinu passed that on to the rest of the Jewish people, and that's reflected by the drosh above, ksav lecha, the writing is given to you. In other words, the secrets in deciphering deeper meanings through shapes of letters, that was given exclusively to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he passed that and shared that with the rest. As you can see, we have a slash mark in our Gemara, in our Mark Gemaras, and that indicates that a new trend of thought follows. You'll see a triangle appearing, and on the side of under the Mivneh heading, Sidro Shel Meimer Shereb Yochanan Hakshurus LeNevuah V'Torah. We're going to see a series of Reb Yochanan teachings that are related to prophecy and Torah. Omer Reb Yochanan, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashre Shechinasoi. Notice, first of all, that we have a long point, and this long point will be followed by another long point. So here, Rabbi Yochanan tells us, who or upon whom does the Almighty enable the divine presence to be a regular, a fixed phenomenon? Upon whom does he allow his divine presence to dwell on a regular basis? So Rabbi Yochanan says that the Kodesh Baruch Hu does not mashre shchinosoi elo al gibor v'oshir chocham v'onov. Four characteristics. Gibor is a person of strength, a warrior, an oshir, a man of wealth, chocham, a man of wisdom, and onov, a man of humility, of humbleness. And all of these characteristics are learned from Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, certainly being the example par excellence of someone that had an ongoing bond with the divine presence. And you can see by just scanning ahead through our markings, keywords are squiggle underlined and numbered. You'll see 1 through 4, Gibor Dichtiv. That Moshe Rabbeinu was a man of strength. Vayifrois es ha'oil ala mishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu covered with the cloth and skin coverings the mishkan. The mishkan was the portable tabernacle that accompanied the Jews through their sojourn in the desert. We'll say the precursor of the Beis HaMikdash. And it was a portable entity, as is described in great detail by the Torah, in Parshas Truma, and described further descriptions in Parshas Vayakel. It had a cloth covering. You'll see some of the dimensions of the Mishkan, and in order to cover this walled structure with the material covering, you'll see that you have to be a large man. The Omar Mor, Moshe Rabbeinu Pirso. Moshe Rabbeinu himself covered the Mishkan. Uksiv, Eser Amois Oyre HaKeresh. The upright boards that constituted the walls of the Mishkan measured 10 Amos in height. 10 Amos, you can imagine, approximately 5 meters tall. 5 meters is like 1.5 stories high. And Moshe Rabbeinu took the cloth coverings and covered it. What does that indicate? That he had to have been a very tall individual. The Gemara asks, Ema de Orech the Kotin. Okay, he might have been very tall, but also very slender. And that physical description would not fall under the category of Gibor. Rashi, the Ran says, Orech kon Orech b'koymos, a very tall, the cotton b'koyach, and as far as strength is concerned, so he was able to pick up these the cloth materials, but that doesn't indicate true strength. Height, yes, but not strength. So where's the Gibor aspect of Moshe Rabbeinu? Elo min hodein kra dichtiv. And notice we have a little base. This is the second attempt to show that Moshe Rabbeinu was in fact a Gibor. The pasuk says, "V'espois b'shnei aluchos v'ashlichem al shtei yodai v'ashabreim." This pasuk describes Moshe Rabbeinu smashing the tablets, the Ten Commandments that were in tablet form, in stone form. V'tanya, now with a little more information regarding the dimensions of these stone tablets, you'll appreciate that he had to have been of phenomenal strength. It says, Haluchos orkon shisha, v'rochvon shisha, v'ovyon shloisha. The luchos measured 6 tfochim in length, 6 tfochim in width. 6 tfochim is an amo, and an amo is basically is half a meter. So a 6 by 6 with a thickness of 3 tfochim. So it's not quite cubed shaped, but it's pretty close to that. So stone measuring 6 by 6 by 3 and then smashing it, that would require a great amount of strength. So Moshe Rabbeinu was a Gibor. Ashir, he was wealthy. Psol lecha, as we saw in the drosha above, at the very end of our previous shiur, we have a little arrow, by the way, to the side of the Gemara text, the left-hand side. You can see where we saw this earlier. And from psol lecha, which meant to carve out or etch out the second commandments, the second tablets, psoltan shelcha yehe. The posuk by saying lecha unto you means that the chips of this we'll call gem quality material that constituted the second tablets, he Moshe Rabbeinu kept that for himself, so he became rich from that. Chacham, man of wisdom, Rav Shmuel d'Amitravayu, that both Rav and Shmuel say Hamishim Shari Bino Nivru Bo'ilam, there are 50 levels or 50 gates of wisdom that were created, that exist in the world. V'kulam nitnu l'moshe choser achas. 49 of the 50, all minus one, were given to Moshe Rabbeinu. So, all minus one, choser achas. Shenema v'tachsereu ma'at me'lekim. That he was created just a bit less than Elohim. What we just did is we offered a literal translation to this pasuk. Personally, yours truly has a great, great difficulty presenting these ideas. The description of man, no matter how great the man is, the greatest of the great men, Moshe Rabbeinu, there's a finite element. The Almighty is infinite. So you can't put the two together. You can't speak about man and the Almighty in comparative terms. But we have Psukim, as the Gemara says elsewhere, if not for the fact that the Torah writes it, we wouldn't be able to say it. So what we're translating here. And the Ran offers an essential explanation of the term Choser Achas. Moshe Rabbeinu was missing one. What does that mean, the missing one? So the Ran says, Choser Achas Yediyas Hashem Yisbarach Al Amitosoi Ki Nechtiva Et Chesrei Ma'at Melekim. And but this is everything. The jump from from 49 to 50 is what I was saying before is the infinite. You're going from the 49 levels of wisdom that are relevant to mankind, and then that 50th is what I would term the jump to the infinite. And the Ran is saying that's the ability to perceive the Almighty in the absolute truthful form that man is incapable of achieving. That's, as we said before, that's the realm of the infinite. But that aside, Moshe Rabbeinu had reached everything that a man could possibly reach. So he is certainly worthy of the description as a chacham, a man of wisdom. Number four, Onov, Dichtiv, Vo'ish Moshe Onov Mo. The Pasuk says explicitly that Moshe Rabbeinu was extremely humble. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, again, as we said before, another long point. Kol HaNevi'im Ashirim Hayu. All the prophets were men of wealth. If I may just offer a side comment, the significance of wealth is such that, first and foremost, it's not a Jewish ideal to build one's life in pursuit of wealth. It's not a traditional Jewish goal. It is something. Wealth is something that the Almighty may bless certain people with it, and it's a very great test. What are you going to do with your wealth? How are you going to lead your life with wealth? But there is an aspect of wealth that has very great significance. You see that over here, and you see that in other contexts, and that a man of wealth is less subject to, let's say, external pressures. And when it comes to being, let's say, obligated to speak the truth, to chastise, it's quite beneficial for such an individual of authority, not to be liable to bribes and pressures, all resulting from issues of wealth of or lack thereof. So it seems to me that a Novi, a prophet, whose main role was to communicate the will of the Kodesh Baruch Hu vis-a-vis the Jewish people, should be able to speak independently, meaning independent of other forces, and speak the truth. Records of Nevi'im that were, in fact, that were subject to pressures, especially coming from the royal family, and in a number of cases they were life-threatening pressures, so that the issue of being able to avoid pressure, at least from the financial end of things, has significance. So that all the Nevi'im were described as wealthy, and that is learned from, we'll say, the precedent setters. Moshe, Mishmuel, Amos, Yonah, four prophets, and from them we can extrapolate that all the prophets, as Rabbi Yochanan says, were men of wealth. Moshe, Dichtiv, and the double underlining that you see here is used to highlight these names who serve as the examples. Moshe Dichtiv, by Moshe Rabbeinu, it says, and it's interesting to note, it occurred to me just this moment, that when we're describing Moshe as Ashir here, it's the Gemara's initial source is not that which we saw before, but and just going on another two lines, you will see that which we had said before. So don't be surprised by the seemingly new source. The Pasuk says, by Moshe Rabbeinu, Lo yichamor echad mehem nososi. Moshe Rabbeinu, referring to the Jewish people, he says, I did not take from them a single donkey. So he's announcing his uprightness and saying that I did not take from them a single donkey. Well, e below agro. If he is saying I didn't take for free, meaning I didn't steal from you a single donkey. Like, what's the big deal in saying I didn't steal? La fuke to the exclusion of man de shoka below agro. Someone who would take without paying. That's not a sign of a high quality individual just because you did not take things without paying for them. Elo da'afilu be'agro. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying I didn't take from anyone even for pay. And the assumption right now is why didn't I need to buy from anyone a donkey? Because I had everything that I needed, meaning that I was a man of wealth. The Ran commentary, Elo afilu ba'agro shelo hoyo nehene mishel achirim. He didn't derive any benefit from others. The Gemara says, how is that a proof, though, that he was wealthy? Dilmo mishum de'oni have. Maybe he was impoverished, and that's why he didn't buy from any, because he couldn't afford to. Elo min psol l'cha. Rather, how do I know that Moshe Rabbeinu was a man of means? Because of what we had said before, from psol l'cha, which we learned, psolton yehe shelcha, the chips, the etchings, or the chips that resulted from his carving out the luchos, he kept for himself. Shmuel d'chtiv. Where do we see that Shmuel was a man of wealth? The pasuk says, Hineni onu bi neged Hashem v'neged Mishichoi eshor mi lokachti v'chamor mi lokachti. Shmuel announces to the entire Jewish people, if anyone has anything to, let's say, question me about, to challenge me, let them do so now. Whose ox did I ever take? Whose donkey did I ever take? So, like we saw before, he is announcing that he never took things from people. Now, what does it mean he never took things from people? If he's saying I never took for nothing, I didn't, again, like I suggested before, he's saying I never stole from anybody. Lafuke man de shokel bechinam, is he trying to set himself apart from those that do take without paying? Obviously not. That's no great accomplishment. Elo da filu bischar, I didn't take from anybody even in exchange for pay. Again, what's the assumption? Because he was a man of wealth. He didn't need to buy from other people. The Gemara says, Dilma d'oni have. Maybe he was impoverished, and that's why he didn't take from anybody. He didn't pay to acquire things because he didn't have the means. Elo mehocha. Rather, from the following source, can we see that Shmuel was a man of wealth? It says, Uchuvosoi horomoso kishom besoi. That's the pasuk. The Omar Rava kol mokim shahalach beso imoi. Wherever he went, he had his own house with him. The Rashi says beso imo kli tashmisho vezehoya meirov osher. Wherever he went, he didn't need to be hosted by anybody, because wherever he went, he had his own means of maintenance. So we see that only a man of means, a man of wealth, could be described thusly, that wherever he went, he was able to host himself. In contemporary terms, one might picture someone like that, that he had apartments, he had flats, he had homes all over the country, so that wherever he went, he was able to host himself and not need to be cared for by others. Once again, a sign of wealth.
Omar Rava, Gadol Mash Nemar B'Shmuel Yoser Misha Nemar B'Moshe. Greater is that which is said regarding Shmuel than that which is said by Moshe Rabbeinu. Greater or more praiseworthy, if you will, is that which refers to Shmuel than that which is in reference to Moshe Rabbeinu. Te'ilu b'Moshe Rabbeinu k'siv, regarding Moshe, says, Lo chamor echod mehem nososi. I didn't take anyone's animals. Tafilu b'schar. That I didn't pay, as we saw before, that I never took anyone's animals, even for pay. Afilu gabi Shmuel, afilu birotzon lo sochroi. By Shmuel, it says that even if people willingly offered me something, I wouldn't take it from them, even in exchange for money. We're going to go over this point momentarily. Just let's complete the source, dichtiv, the source meaning the pasuk that illustrates this. It says, Vayomer lo ashaktanu, the Vayomru, the people responded. We saw before Shmuel announcing to the people, holding forth, describing himself as someone who never took from the people, and if anyone has anything to say, so let them say it now. And in response, the people said to him, Vayomru, they said, Lo ashaktanu, v'lo ratzosenu. The word ratzosenu is associated with the word rotzon, willingly. Now, we have to explain this, and we'll do so through the Mefarshim. We look at the Tosfos. You'll notice the Tosfos on the sixth line of the Tosfos commentary. Dilu b'moshe k'siv lo chamor echod mehem nososi baal korchayu. I never forced anyone to sell me a donkey. Michlal, we can infer from that, the berotzon sochra, that in exchange for money and willingness on the part of the people, there were situations that Moshe Rabbeinu, seeing that the person was willing, would offer money to the individual and in exchange receive a donkey or an animal. Ah, v'shemo lo hayu roitzim. Maybe the people didn't really want to sell him the animal. Uboishin l'sarev l'haskir. And they were embarrassed to resist the l'haskir, which often means the rental of, could very well mean the payment for. So, as far as the practice of Moshe Rabbeinu, what we are revealing is that Moshe Rabbeinu never forced a sale of an animal, but if it wasn't a forced sale, he might have purchased from the owner of the animal. But that itself contains an element of problem to it, and that is that yes, the owner was selling the animal without being forced, but he was dealing with Moshe Rabbeinu. Maybe he really didn't want to sell, but out of embarrassment he went ahead and sold. V'ilu b'shmul k'siv ratzoisi mashma lo bikashti l'schor mimenu v'afilu b'ritzui, that even through overt willingness, I never hired or I never bought anything from the population, indicating that even a situation where a person would be ill at ease never arose in the case of Shmuel. Very simply, he never took anything under any circumstances, even though we're talking about for pay, never took things from people, even for pay, even under the most overtly willing circumstances. And as the Ran says, Afilu Barotzen Dezinen Misratzu, there are many times people might agree to a sale, Mishum Kisuf, out of embarrassment. Velo Nicholu, it's not something that they're comfortable avoiding. So Shmuel went the extra mile and didn't never never had people in that position where they might have been embarrassed to resist. The Gemara continues, Amos, Dichtiv, the prophet Amos, was a man of wealth. Vayan Amos, Vayomer lo el Amatzia. The prophet Amos said to the king Amatzia, Lo novi onochi, velo ben novi onochi. I'm not a prophet, I'm not the son of a prophet. Ki boker onochi uboiles shikmim. And in order to appreciate this, Kedemetagim Rav Yosef, as Rav Yosef explains in Aramaic, Ari mori gisi ano. I am the owner of flocks of sheep. V'shikmin li b'shvelta. Shikmin is a type of tree, so a valuable tree, and I own these trees, maybe groves of trees in shvelta, a certain region of the country. So a man who commands herds of animals or flocks and herds of animals and groves of trees is a man of wealth. Yonah dichtiv, regarding the prophet Yonah. Yonah is famous in the story of, we'll say, Jonah and the whale. That prophet was a man of wealth. Dichtiv, vayitain schora vayered bo. Yonah, if you're familiar with the story of Yonah, he tried to, we'll say, escape or leave Eretz Yisrael, and he went on a boat, and it says that he paid money and then descended upon the boat. The Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Shenosan Schora Shel Sfina Kula, what he in effect did was he bought the boat. He didn't just pay for a ticket to be a passenger on the boat, but he bought the entire boat. The Omar Rabbi Ruminus, Schora Shel Sfina, the cost of a boat, Havya Dalet Alofim Dinrei Dava, is 4,000 golden dinar. Well, if Yonah could whip out of his pocket 4,000 golden dinar, he was a man of wealth. The Omer of Yochanan, B'tchilo Yemoshe lo Meitoro u'mishakcha. Here is something that each one of us who are students of Torah should take great comfort in. Moshe Rabbeinu, the foremost pillar of Torah study, was someone that initially in his learning he would learn and forget. And I tend to think that it's not a one-time learning effort, but he would go over and go over and would forget. Ad shenitna loy b'matana, until it was given to him to remember, but as a gift from the Almighty. Shenemar vayitain el Moshe kechaloisu ledaber itoy. Vayitain is a loshen matana, is an expression indicating a gift. There is a lot to talk about on this topic, and we're not going to develop it in the context of our Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shiurim, but just one or two points for the sake of strengthening each one of us in our Torah learning efforts. Everyone should be aware that the ability to retain, to remember Torah learning necessitates divine intervention. The foremost source on this topic, which I recommend looking up, is a Gemara in Maseches Megillah, Davov Amud Beis, where the Gemara says, Lukume Girsa Siata Tishmayahi, that in order to Lukume Girsa, to maintain, to remember Torah learning, you need heavenly assistance, siyata d'shmaya. And that's what you see over here concerning the greatest of our people. And why is this so important? Because there are many people that study Torah, especially amongst younger people, that study Torah, and as time goes on, they feel that they don't remember. Exactly how to define memory, that is in of itself worthy of a long discussion. But be that as it may, people think they don't remember when in fact they really do. But as I say, let's leave that aside. The mere preoccupation with their feeling that they don't retain, which is very discouraging and leading people to reduce or cease their Torah study, is very, very unfortunate. Torah study is to be done, as the Gemara says in Maseches Avodah Zarah Daf Yutes, Le'olam Ligmar Inish Afal Gav De Mishkach. Even if he forgets, you keep on learning and hope and pray, give tzedaka, as the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah Daf Ches suggests, in order to remember, you need to pray for that. And once again, we see the greatest of our people would learn and forget until the Almighty decided, "I'm giving you the Torah retention as a gift." And Mirtz Hashem, each one of us should merit such an achievement. The Mishnah. Before we continue with the Mishnah, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading, the Nosei, Hamadir Hano Mechavero, a person who, through a vow, prevents his friend from deriving benefit. Mal Lozun Es Ishto Ubonov. Can the Madir support the Mudar's wife, sons, children, Bei Moisov, his animals, Haturim, Hatmeim, the kosher variety animals, the unkosher variety animals? The Mishnah. The background, once again, is this the example that we've been studying from the beginning of the perek, a mudar hano, the zon es ishto ves bonov. He is able to, and it would not be the violation of a vow if he supports the subject of the vow's wife and his children. Afal pi shehu chayov b'mezonoson. Even though he, the subject of the vow himself, is obligated to support his own wife. The Rosh points out that the chayov is going on the wife. The Ran commentary, v'zon es ishto v'zbonov, afilu kirabonon asya. This is not only in accordance with Chonon that said that it's permitted to support the Mudar's wife, but even according to the Rabbonon that had argued with Chonon, this particular Mishnah is appropriate, or is in accordance with them. So the Ran goes on, the betoras mitzvah askino velo betoras piron shel baal shechayv mizonoseihem. Here the Mishnah is looking at things from the mitzvah angle, and not from the financial payment angle of things. V'afagav daham mudar mishani, even though the subject of vow benefits she'eino tzorach losseis lahem mizonos, he now isn't going to have to pay for their upkeep. Hahi hanod memelehi. That's pleasure, but it's automatic. It's residual pleasure as opposed to direct pleasure. The Rashi comments. V'zon es ishto v'zbonov shalmudar afal pi shehamudar chayav v'mezeinoson. Even though the mudar himself is obligated to support his wife, kevon delav liftumi avidon, since the feeding of his wife is not to fatten her up, as would be the case with animals, v'dai lohen v'mai shehu mefarneson, and what this man is giving them, what the madir is giving them, is enough for their subsistence. Lav hanom ruba ovid leh. It's not considered a large amount of pleasure. The Tosfos adds another detail that is of benefit when discussing the issue of Chonon and the Rabbonon. V'zonas ishto uvonav, the Tosfos says, I asyo kechonan nicha, if you say that this Mishnah is in accordance with Chonan, with the opinion of Chonan, then this is smooth. Demavriya chari ba'almahu. The idea of paying someone else's debts is not direct giving of benefit, but rather it's the prevention of damage. Literally, the chasing away of a lion. V'chi asyo nami kerabonan nicha shapir. And we can say that this Mishnah conforms to the Rabbonon as well. The Mayri Hocha B'Mizaynis Yiseros, the Ein Nifra Mibayla. Here we're talking about extra food, beyond the basic obligation, and this person is not going to be collecting from the husband. The Chipligi Rabbonon Hainu B'Mefarnes Stam. The Machlokes Chonon and the Rabbonon is with regard to, can a Madir Hanome Chavero support the Mudor's wife in her basic necessities? There, Chonon says yes, and the Rabbonon say no. Afapi Shelo Pirish L'Shem Havo. Mikomokum L'Shem Matono Lo Yohiv. V'Havi L'Rabbonon Kemo Yerid L'Sich Stei Chavero Shelo B'Shus. And Tosfos goes on with a more involved commentary, which we will leave aside for right now. The Mishnah goes on. V'lo yozun es behemto. The Tanakhama says that the Madir shall not support the feed the animals of the Mudar, Bein Tmeo, Bein Torah, whether they be unkosher variety animals or kosher variety animals. The allusion was made before to the idea of fattening them up. Feeding animals is, in a sense, is in effect with the intention of fattening them up. That is, that would be a source of direct pleasure to the Mudar, which would be a violation of the vow. Rebbe Lezer, the Mishnah goes on, Rebbe Lezer Omer, Zon es hatmea, v'eino zon es hatahira. Rebbe Lezer makes a distinction. The Madir, the initiator of the vow, can support the subject's unkosher variety animals, but not their kosher variety animals. Omru lo, the Rabbanan said to Rebbe Lezer, ma bein tmea l'tor. What's the difference between an unkosher and kosher variety animal with regard to the vow? Omar luhu, Rebbe Lezer answers, shatero nafsho l'shamayim v'gufo shelo. The kosher variety animal is described as its spirit is in it belongs to the heaven, but its body belongs to him, to the owner, in this case the Mudar. Tamea, the unkosher variety animal, which Rebbe Lezer says the Madir is allowed to support, Nafsha, we're at the top of Omid Beis, Nafsha Vigufa Lashamayim. The spirit and the body belong to heaven, which is maybe a poetic way of saying it's not fit for eating. Animals that are fit for eating, there the feeding of those animals is with the intent of fattening them up for their meat value. And that was, as we described before, that would be direct pleasure given to the Mudar, which is a violation of the vow. Unkosher variety animals, they're used for work purposes. They're being fattened up is not of significance for their performance of work. There's a commentary in the Tosfos at the bottom of Lamed Ches Omed Aleph. We have a little star. These terms, nafsha and gufa, to heaven, she'ena yechil lehenis, ela ba'oid nafsha ba. It's another way of saying that your benefit from the animal is only while it's alive. Hilkoch lav hanohi. Therefore, the feeding of it, the fattening up of it, is not a source of pleasure for its owner, the Mudar. Avo tahoiro nafsha l'shamayim klomar afopisha nafsha l'shamayim gufa shelo l'shchita. Even though its spirit is heavenly ordained, an animal while it's alive is something you're not allowed to eat. You have to slaughter it in order to eat it. While it's alive, it's called aver minachai. It's something prohibited. so that as long as it's alive, as long as it's nefesh, its life breath is in it, so you don't have access to it in terms of eating it. But gufa, once you slaughter it and you're left with just the body, in the case of a kosher brine animal, that is something that you can benefit from. And in the case of a madir and a mudar, where a vow was made, so the feeding of that kosher brine animal would be a violation of the vow. You're giving him direct benefit in the increased mass of the animal with regard to its meat value. The Mishnah continues, Omru lo, the Rabbonon who argued with Reb Lezer, said back to him, Af hatmeo nafsho l'shamayim v'gufa shelo, even when it comes to unkosher variety animals, imagine horses and swine, they can be described in the same way. She'im yirtze harehu mochra li'ovdei kechavim o machilo l'klovim. He can sell his horses to non-Jews, and they can benefit from the meat aspect, the meat value of the animal, or a fattened animal would represent more meat for his dogs. So they don't see a distinction between the Tamea and the Tahora, as Rebbe Lazar had seen. The Gemara, Omar of Yitzchok bar Hananya, Omar of Huna, Hamudar Hanoa Mechavero, Mutar Lahasi Loi Bito. If one prevented the other from deriving benefit, he nevertheless is allowed to marry him, to marry off his daughter to the other fellow. You'll notice, and we had this in a previous year, that we used pronouns. And those who are familiar with our Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shurim, and our, let's say, principles of learning, we try to avoid pronouns at all costs. Pronouns are a very, very confusing aspect of learning Gemara. In this case, though, in order for the Gemara to have a flexibility in presenting different possibilities, we had to present it with the pronouns as we did. And on the side of the Gemara, you'll see the Nosei, the topic heading, Din Shem Rav Huna, Rav Huna's law, Hamudur Hanom Mechaver Mutur La'asio Es Bito. One who forbade his fellow from benefiting from him, nevertheless, the daughter can be married off. Under the Mivneh heading, a triangle appears, and the triangles in the Gemara represent Shlavim Levar Nichse Mi Asurin Almi. The property of whom is prohibited upon whom. All we see is that Rav Huna says that in a Mudar Hanom Mechaver situation, one's daughter can be married to the other party. So the Gemara continues. Havi bo Rabbi Zera b'mayaskin. Havi is an expression meaning a question is raised. Rabbi Zera raises the question. B'mayaskin, what are the circumstances? What are we talking about? I lemo b'shenichse avi kalo asurin al hachoson, that the property of the bride's father is prohibited upon the groom. So the madir is the father of the bride. And what is Rav Huna then saying? That the father of the bride, even though he prevents the groom from benefiting from the father of the bride's properties, he, the father of the bride, can nevertheless marry off his daughter to this chosan who was, as we said, prevented from benefiting from the avi hakala. But how could that be? Hare moiser loy shivcha leshamsho. A man who gives over his daughter, and we might mention just in parenthetically that when we speak about man giving over daughter, we're inevitably referring to a daughter who is a minor, and that one of the rights a father has from the Torah is to marry off his daughter as long as she is under his jurisdiction. And as long as, when we say jurisdiction, that's defined by her age up till 12 and a half. So if we're talking about if we're going to suggest that the circumstances behind Rav Huna's statement are that the Nichsei Avi HaKal are also on the Chosan, how in the world could that man give over his daughter to this groom? He's giving over, essentially he's giving over the equivalent of a maidservant. This might not sound politically correct to some, we'll say, sensitive ears, but here we're going to try to stick close to the Gemara translation. There is a Mishnah in Ksubis that speaks about obligations that a woman has toward her husband. If you haven't learned Maseches Ksubis, then you are not aware of the fact that a man has a tremendous amount of obligation toward his wife. But looking at things from the perspective of the wife, she has obligations to fulfill for husband. So in that context, she's referred to as a shivcha, as a maidservant to serve her husband. So how in the world could the father of the kala, who says that he doesn't want the chosan to benefit, how can he give over his daughter to the chosan? Ela kishenichse chosan asurin al avi kala. So let's try this out. The circumstances are that the chosan's properties are prohibited to the father of the bride. Okay, so the groom's possessions are prohibited to the father of the bride. And then Rav Huna is telling me that the woman, the girl, can be married off all the same to the chosan. Now, you'll ask yourself, is there any chiddush in that? Is that not obvious? And as the Gemara says, Gedola Mizu Amru, there is even a bigger chiddush that is stated in the Mishnah, making this statement of Rav Huna, if you assume these circumstances, anticlimactic. What does it say? If you have someone that is Madir Hano Mechavero, our Mishnah said that the Madir, the one who initiates the vow, Zones Ishto Vezbonov, Vafapi Shehu Chayeb Mezoyinosan. Here you have a Madir giving legitimately property in the direction of the Mudar, namely to the Mudar's wife and children, even though the Mudar himself is obligated to support his wife. The Mishnah allows even that, where the Madir is giving to in the direction of the Mudar. Viad Amris, and you, Rav Huna, would be telling me Mutar Lahasi Loi Bito, where the Mudar, the one who is prevented from getting pleasure, is giving to the Madir. The one who's prevented from receiving pleasure, he is giving to the initiator of the vow. That's terribly obvious. Once again, if a person who initiates the vow is able to give to the subject of the vow, namely to his wife or his children, and that's allowed, so where the all the more understandable is where the Mudar, the subject of the vow, is giving something to the Madir. It's obvious that that would be allowed. There is a comment in the Ran that we'll look at together. Toward the end of the narrow lines of the Ran commentary, G'doylo mizu amru, zones ishtav ezbono v'yad amris mutu lahasi lo bito klomar, im hu yocho lo zunes bito ba'oido birshuso, if the Madir is able to support the daughter of the Mudar, when she's in the mudar's domain, shu chayv mezeha, where the father of the girl is expected to support his daughter, kol sheken shiyucha lozun osa achar shenosa shenischayev mezonos ishto umay komashmon rav huna. The Gemara continues. Li oilom b'shenichse avi kala asurin ala chasam. We're going to go back to that scenario, namely where the property of the father of the bride, his possessions are prohibited upon the chasam. And did we not say that how in the world could we allow that? Is it not so that the father of the bride is giving a maidservant in the form of his daughter to the chasan? How can we allow that? Ubebito bogeres umidaita. It's in fact dealing with an adult daughter. And her marriage to the chasan is something that she's doing on her own volition. So that it's not a violation of the vow. It's not that the father of the girl who is the madir is giving over his daughter. She's no longer in the father's domain to be given over. Ah, what about the fact that she's marrying the mudar? That's midaita. The Ran elaborates on the first wide line, Obibito bogeres, de lo ihu komosor lo elohi atzmo. It's not the father giving to the mudar the girl, but rather on her own volition. Umidaita, taimo kiyov lemilse klomar mishum hachi shori. It's because of this that we're allowing it. Umidaita hi. The word midaita is added in the Gemara as an explanation. The kevon shebogro shuv ain of yorushus. But once she becomes an adult, a bogeris that's over 12 and a half, the father has no longer any control over her. The Gemara continues. Tanyo nami hachi. The following source serves as support. And Rashi, he says, Tanya Meochi Dahano Mu'etis Muteris. We're dealing with a small level, a low level, a minor level of pleasure that is allowed. That's not considered a violation of the vow. The Gemara continues with the source, Hamudur Hano Mechavero Osu Lahasilo Bito. If A prevents B from getting benefit from A's property, so A cannot marry off his daughter to B. Avol masio bito bogeres umidaito. However, if you're dealing with an adult daughter, then she can be married to the mudar. Omer v'yankiv hamadir benoi l'talmud Torah. And regarding this phrase, there are, I would say, opposite commentaries that you find in Rashi and the Ran. So a father imposed a vow concerning his son regarding Torah. We'll have to look shortly at the commentaries that we just mentioned in order to appreciate this. But a vow was imposed by father regarding son. Mutter lemalois loy chovis shelmayim. It's mutter for him. Now, again, we're going to use a pronoun, and this is not a result of the Gemara, but rather of the Rashi versus the Ran. So, it says that even though a vow was imposed, it is allowed for him to fill up a vessel of water for him, u'lahadlik lo eshaner, and to light a candle for him, rebitzogomer litzlois loydag cotton, to roast a small fish. As promised, we look at the Rashi commentary. Hamadir es benoi mina chosav im lo yilmoi Torah. A father banned his son through a vow from benefiting from the father's property if he doesn't learn Torah. So you have a father that's very insistent on his son studying Torah. Mutter ha'av lemalois v'chulei, it is allowed for the father to fill up for the son. Shanom rubo nodar himenu v'lo hanomu etis. What the what the father was prohibiting through a vow was a large amount of hana, but a small amount of hana, a small amount of pleasure, that was never part of the vow. V'zu hana mu'etesi, the filled vessel with water, the lighting of the candle. These are small forms of pleasure. They weren't included in the vow. So even though the father does not want the son to benefit from him, unless he learns Torah, doing these small things, my assumption is from Rashi, even if the son isn't arduous in his pursuit of Torah, these would not constitute a violation of the vow. Now we glance at the Ran commentary. Third line under the Gemara text, Hamadiris Benola Talmud Torah, Ha'av Hediroi Shelo Yehene Oviv Mimenu, Kadesh Shaliz Batal Mitalmud Torah. Here, the father took upon himself a vow not to benefit from the son, so as not to cause the son Bittul Torah. Bittul Torah is a situation where a person departs from the study of Torah. So that here you have a father that doesn't want to get benefit from his son because that would cause the son to be Bittul Mevatel Torah. The Ran continues, Mutter Haben L'malei Slov V'chovis Shomayim L'hadlik Lo Yisaner. Here the father, though he had imposed upon himself the pleasure restriction, the son nevertheless can fill for the father a vessel of water, light a candle, demistoma mimili zutri kihani. It's to be assumed that when it comes to these minor types of benefit, the lekabu bitul limud Torah, for a person who is, let's say, studying Torah to get up and light a candle for someone else, that does not constitute the voidance of Torah study. So that was lo adre, that was never part of the original vow, the original self-imposed deprivation that the father took upon himself. The Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hamudar Hano Mechavero, someone who imposed prohibition of benefit through a vow, Mutar Lahashkoisoi Kais Shel Shalom. He nevertheless, if let's say A said to B, Mr. B, I don't want you to benefit from me. A nevertheless can fill a cup of water, or a Kais Shel Shalom, the cup of peace. My knee, what is meant by the cup of peace? So we have two explanations. Hocha Targimu Kais Shel Beis Ha'ovel. It's a reference to the cup that's drunk in the house of mourning. And the cups that are drunk in the house of mourning is something that the Gemara in Maseches Ksubis elaborates on that a little bit more. Regarding the topic, the Rosh expounds on that a bit more. In B'marova Amri, Kais Shel Beis HaMerchatz. Marov, and it means in Eretz Yisrael, Kais Shel Shalom is the Kais Shel Beis HaMerchatz, the cup of the bathhouse. And the Rosh explains that after a person goes into a bathhouse, it is healthful for him to consume heated water. He should drink a hot cup of water. Otherwise, he doesn't really derive benefit from the bathhouse. So, Kais Shel Shalom, according to the Marava Pshat, is this Kais Shel Beis HaMerchatz. So that even though someone, A, was Madir Hanoa from B, A can nevertheless still present B with a cup of hot water after a bathhouse experience. V'lo yozun es behemtoi v'chulei. Tanya Yeshua ish oza omer. Yeshua ish uza. That's an opinion. It's the name of someone. Says Zon avoda v'shivchosef haknanim v'lo yozun es behemto bein tmeo bein tahora. That in a madir hanome chavero situation, so the madir is allowed to offer food, support to the mudar's human slaves and bondmaids, the Gentile slaves and bondmaids. However, he cannot, the madir cannot feed the mudar's animals, whether they be unkosher variety or kosher variety. My taima, what is the basis of this distinction? Answer: avoda v'shivchosev aknanim leman charusa avidon. Slaves and bondmaids, their purpose is leman charusa, for work, not for being fattened up. So the food that's given to them is not, let's say, translated into a desired increase body mass, and therefore the amount of pleasure that the mudar would be getting from the madir is minimum. Behema liftum avido. However, when you're dealing with an animal, so that its very existence is for being fattened up, and therefore feeding the man's animals is considered of a more significant and direct pleasure, and hence that would be prohibited in the case of a mudar hana. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.